It's the Musical Theater Book Club. Let's talk about a show.
Welcome to Musical Theater Book Club, where we talk about our favorite musicals, our least favorite musicals, and everything in between. I'm Berkeley.
I'm Sarah.
And today we are talking about the cultural phenomenon Hamilton. Hey.
I sound like I'm so unexcited, even though this is my favorite show. Like, you guys are going to just hear me incredibly fangirl over the next two episodes.
That's right. This is a two-parter.
So in case you're wondering, just to kind of give you a brief overview of what we're planning on doing and why we're splitting this into two, is there is just so much about Hamilton. And I'm sure most of you know, because, I mean, it is such a huge deal. So we will be spending this episode talking about the actual musical, all the things behind it. And then next week, we're going to talk about all the little extra things that go with it. So like the exhibit, the book that came with it, the Hamel drops, the mixtapes, Ham for Ham, all those extra little parts that came after the show.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about it. I feel like this show just has so much to offer, not only as a musical, but also, like you said, the extras. There's just so much, and Lynn has created so much content.
Yeah, like, I think I'm actually almost more excited to talk about all the extra stuff, just because I don't get to talk about it as much. I get to talk about Hamilton, and everyone, I mean, anyone who knows me knows, obviously, I love it. Like, I mean, I have a Hamilton tattoo. I don't hide my love for the show, but I don't really get to talk about the extra stuff as much, so I'm definitely excited to talk about that next time.
Normally, when we take our notes, we each write them down, so we each have notepads. I put mine on the Google Drive we shared this week, so I have my own notes, and I know you looked at it for, like, a second.
Yeah, but then I felt guilty, because we usually try not to, so I was like, oh, no, I'm going to leave this.
Well, basically, I know, we'll just wait till we get to the music. I got some talking to do. So we have both seen the show. I've only seen it twice. You've seen it.
Spill. I've seen it seven times. It's always really hard to talk about, because I always feel, I'll be honest, I feel like people get really judgy about it. People who aren't in musical theater are like, why do you go see a show so many times? What do you get out of it? Which, a lot. I've seen it. So out of the seven times I've seen it in four different cities, and I've seen three different casts. I mean, actually probably four different casts at this point, because I saw it the seventh time, I think, was a different group. So I saw it in San Francisco the first time, then I saw it in New York. I saw it in LA, which was the same cast as in San Francisco, and then I saw it in Chicago. So those are the four different cities I've seen it in. So for people who don't like musical theater, you know, I'm always trying to explain, like, you see, you know, when it's at a different theater, the staging's different, different cast, like, they all bring something different to the show. And even if I see the same cast, I still have picked up on things, you know, the sixth, seventh time that I hadn't seen before. And then the other thing people are always like, how do you afford it? And I mean, one, I don't have children and I'm an adult, so I have money. I mean, we don't buy the $500-$600 seats. Like, that's ridiculous. No show, including this one, is worth buying that much. And then I have an American Express card, which has helped to be able to get the, like, early release stuff, because I know one of the things, too, kind of jumping forward, but, like, when the first two were open and it started, like, the tickets sold out in 24 hours, so that had helped. But, yeah, I always feel really, like, very lucky that I've seen it so many times, but I also am always really skeptical to tell people that I've actually seen it that many times, because, like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think it goes a lot into the show as well, because people are like, it's a show I have to see. I haven't seen it yet. And they almost get, I don't know, they get weird about it. So I can see how that, like, I feel weird saying I've seen it twice.
Like, yeah, so, like, the first time when I got tickets, like, I remember, I don't know if you remember me texting you, but that was, like, the most stressful, like, that waiting period and being in that lobby. And I was like, oh, my God, am I going to get tickets? What is going to happen? I can't remember which time it was, but one of the times later, I actually ended up going home and saying I had a doctor's appointment. In my defense, my work wanted me to stay later. It's not like I, like, left work. They were like, oh, can you stay? And I was like, oh, I have a doctor's appointment. So I ended up leaving for my appointment and came back so that I could buy tickets. I think that was when I went to bought tickets for the LA one.
Okay. I think I remember that. I think, yeah. That's the one. My first time I saw it with you in LA.
Yeah, I forgot you saw it a second time.
Yeah, I saw it with my parents at the San Francisco run. There's a great app that we should talk about at some point, or I'll talk about it right now. Today's Ticks. They're great, and they have a number of places all over, at least the United States. I think they go into London as well, and maybe a couple places in Canada, but they give you discount tickets for everything. Hashtag not sponsored, but Today Ticks, if somebody's listening, you can sponsor us. I will gladly talk about you because I use you all the time. Last time I went to New York, that's how I got a lot of my tickets. It's just so much easier. Okay, let's get into the show.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about everything else. So obviously, we'll start off with the creatives. Lin wrote the show. We know that. Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote the show. But I think talking about the whole creative team should always be important. But I think it's especially important with this one. The director is Thomas Kail. The music director is Alex Lacamoire. And then the choreographer is Andy Blankenbuehler. I think it's really important just to mention all of those, because I know I at least will hit stuff that Alex has done and Thomas. I can't say so much about Andy, but the choreo is really good too.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think it just speaks for this show too, of like, this is one of the few shows, and I mean, maybe it's just because, again, huge fan, but like, where their names actually seem to pop up more and appear more, whereas like most other shows, you kind of hear the common names of like the creators and stuff like that, but you don't hear all these, like the musical director and the director. I don't know their names from the other shows, but like, I feel like I constantly see Alex and Thomas and Andy's names popping up.
And I think a lot of that goes to just how Lin treats the people he works with as well. He brings them into the spotlight with him, yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing that he does a lot too, is like, he has this way of just bringing people in and keeping them for a long time. And obviously, whatever he's doing is working. But I just remember, I guess we didn't have it written down, so we can just talk about it really quick. Did you watch the Drunk History episode?
Oh, I did. I've seen it like once, I think.
Okay, I just remember he has this one part of the Drunk History episode where he like calls Christopher Jackson and he's like, as long as I have a job, you have a job. And like, that just always stood out to me. He's like, they're just such good friends and I love it, you know? They're like, they can just keep going.
And that's why you don't burn bridges. I don't think we have to go into much about what the story is about.
Yeah.
It's about Hamilton, the first Secretary of Treasury. And how he helped shape the founding of America. There you go. That's the story. The idea for the musical came from Ron Chernow's biography on Alexander Hamilton. Lin was relaxing on vacation from In the Heights and started reading the book, and he was like, yo, let's write a musical.
It's on my bookshelf, and I've been meaning to for so long. I started it one time, but I made the mistake of trying to start it while I was in grad school, so who has time for that? But it was pretty interesting too. Like, I feel like nonfiction books can get really boring and bland, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm starting to see where he got it from, so on my to-read list one of these days.
What I think is interesting, it started off with him working on the Hamilton mixtape, which essentially was going to be like a song cycle concept album on Hamilton's life. And we've talked a lot about concept albums and like song cycles recently in more of our private conversations. I feel like they pop up, and I think it's cool seeing these musicals be formed from these song cycles.
Yeah, I mean, even our last, well, I guess now it'd be two episodes ago, when we talked about Miss Saigon, we even, you know, we had talked about it there, that was originally gonna be a concept album. And then, yeah, if you haven't seen the, you know, he went and performed it at a poetry,
it was the
thing,
the White House Night of Poetry something in spoken voice.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it was like somewhere. Right after, like shortly after Obama became president, because it was like 2009. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, I mean, go watch it. It's great. And it, you know, it's really funny because you just see, I mean, first of all, Lin's a baby, obviously. And then like, he'd even said too, you know, he wasn't invited for that. Like, he was invited for In the Heights and he was the last person to perform. And he's like, actually, I've been working on this. And I don't know. It's really cool. So if you haven't seen that yet, go check that out. So yeah, 2009, it was still going to be a concept album. And then 2013, they did their first show workshop at Vassar College.
In 2015, the show opened at the Public Theater. This was their off-Broadway tryout spot, which I think we should do a show about at some point. And then it made a quick transfer to the Richard Rodgers Theater, which we've already talked about. You want to be put in the Richard Rodgers Theater, unless you're If Then. But we don't talk about that.
Yeah, and this is the same theater that hosted In the Heights. So, you know, Lin's already been there and had familiarity, and was another show that also won the Tony. So,
mm-hmm.
Also, if you ever go to New York and you go near the Richard Rodgers Theater, there is a pizza place, like, right across the street. It's like one of those, you know, very New York, tiny hole in the wall pizza places, but they have a sign Hamilton and a sign In the Heights poster. And I just like to imagine that the cast constantly went there during like off times, because I remember seeing it. And I was like, that's so cool.
I love that. since then, a production has opened in the West End, and there's been 3 national tours. And then what I thought was interesting that I didn't know is they were working on a German language production that was supposed to open in Hamburg later this year. And then next year, Sydney was supposed to get a production. Obviously, I'm sure things have changed. Sydney might not have changed with COVID, but Hamburg, I'm sure, has. But Hamilton in German, I'm interested. I'm intrigued. In that case, because we're starting to get the foreign productions, I think it's safe to say Hamilton can officially be considered a mega musical based off of what we were talking about with Miss Saigon, although I think it was beforehand.
I know we talked about what makes a mega musical, but I'm like, let's be real. This thing, yeah, it was on its own already. It was such a huge deal. And then the other thing, too, on top of having all the tours, is it also was in Chicago for many, many years. It went to Chicago in October of 2016 and had just closed in January of this year of 2020. So it had a residency. Besides being in New York, it also had a residency in Chicago for 4 years, mm-hmm. plus all the tours.
All the tours. And one of the tour stops was Puerto Rico. That was part of the relief for the hurricane, right?
Yeah. So I believe they wanted to perform there already beforehand, and then after the hurricane, I think it became much more of a priority, which is a very rare thing I was reading too. Like, shows don't usually go to Puerto Rico because, you know, it's hard to bring the stuff over there because it's not like, you know, the continental US. They're just driving everywhere. They have to like physically fly all the things over to Puerto Rico or take them on a ship. So Puerto Rico, unfortunately, doesn't usually get shows. It's very rare that that happens.
No, that's really cool. So I think what makes this show so important and so big in general is the concept. And I'm not talking about the concept of Hamilton, the concept of taking this person we know and then telling it with people of color. I think that's super important. The one quote that I really like is, it's the story of America as told by America now.
Yeah, I wish I could find it. I sent you a TikTok a while ago and I really wish I could find it, but it was like a perfect embodiment of what made Hamilton so popular. And it's not just like, oh, it's good music and it's cool and it's fun to watch. I mean, it took elements of things that were new, as far as hip hop in shows is not a thing. Like, you know, you might have some here and there, but I'm sure you would know because you're better at this than me, but I can't think of a show that is not a Lin show that has rap in it. Like, I'm thinking of In the Heights and Bring It On has a little bit, but those are Lin shows. And so, like, you know, it brings this new concept of, you know, new kind of singing, the casting, which we'll talk about more in a moment, like the diverse casting, but it also like made musicals mainstream. People who don't listen to musicals know what Hamilton is. And a lot of people who don't listen to musicals like Hamilton. You know, going back, I mentioned a couple, when we were talking about the Tonys episode, I mentioned, you know, my boyfriend's not a big musical theater person. Like, he'll go to shows with me, but he's not like I'll listen to it constantly on my own. He doesn't. But I remember, like, he would text me things every once in a while, and I could tell he's, like, listening to the show at work, and he'd be like, oh, like, blah, 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 this and this, and I'm like, what? And it would be things, like, I didn't even pick up on. So, you know, it really brought together this idea of, like, making musical theater more mainstream, and like we talked about in the Tonys episode, and even in our interview with, like, Anna Lee, like, people who like musical theater and Broadway, like, it's like, everyone's like, yeah, everyone knows about this. But it's not that way with most shows, but Hamilton found a way to do it.
It's true. I think part of the way they do that is the reimagination of history too. I think you see it not only with like the story being retold, but everything works together to sort of reimagine what we know as our history, what we've learned from our history books. There's a couple of like set designs and stuff, costumes that I want to talk about really fast. The costumes, they're almost like updated modern period pieces, which I love. Like, they use the frock coats and the knee breeches to sort of give you the idea that this is an older piece. Like, it is sort of a period piece, but then they update it to make it look contemporary, so you know that this is somewhat of a period piece, but we're telling it our way. And I really love that. The other thing is the set, because as I was looking at the set, it's just wooden scaffolding against a brick, and then it's just like nice warm lighting. And then I was like looking at it, and I was like, it's almost, I don't want to say like it looks like it's unfinished, but it's just the foundation. And so part of me started thinking like, okay, so are we giving like a foundation look because we're building the foundation of America? And I was like, oh, is this a thing? Is this a thing that I didn't know about?
I'm sure it is. I've come to the conclusion that anything that you think it is probably is, because just, I don't want to sound just like over the top obsessed with Lynn, but let's be real. Like, he's smart.
True.
Very yeah, true. Probably. Yeah, probably is.
So let's get into casting. Most of the cast are people of color, including those playing the Founding Fathers, which is extremely important. As I said, the show has been described as the story of America being told by America now. And I love it. I think it's such a good idea.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the other things that was in the TikTok, too, was talking about how it did allow, we've talked about this so many times, we always will, we want more people of color in the shows. Like, Berkeley and I are two white people. We don't need to see more of us. We've seen enough of us.
Yeah.
Like, please, for the love of God, give us diversity in casting. And it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, obviously you see it, but it makes no fucking difference to the show. Like, mm-mm. It works so well, but it's not like, it's not a big deal. And it's just, oh, it's so good.
When I go to a show, I almost feel more empowered when I see a diverse cast. I don't want to see a cast of all white people. Yes, as a white person, I suppose that should speak to me, but because it's what we see all the time, it doesn't. Like, it's just me seeing another piece of art. What really speaks to me is when I see a diverse cast of people. That is what's beautiful to me.
Yeah, I feel like it almost makes me more aware when I do go to a show that has a white cast, like, especially nowadays. Like, if I go to a newer show and I'm like, oh, everyone's white, I'm kind of like, why?
And don't get me wrong, I understand places, smaller theater companies that don't necessarily get the pull from people of color, but we're talking professional productions here. They're getting the pull of people of color. There is no excuse. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. There's no excuse.
No, yeah. I have a couple shows specifically in my head that I don't want to, like, call out and have their fan base yell at me, but there's a couple shows specifically that are, like, shows that have come out in the last couple years that I'm just like, why is there one black person in this show when none of their characters' race matters? And then, you know, we keep going back to this talking about TikTok, but it just, and we'll probably end up just cutting this out because it's me going on a tangent, but you see all these people on TikTok that are, like, either starting to try to break into the business or are still in college for theater, and they're so talented, and you're just like, them or people like them, please.
Yeah. And it's not to say that the people in the show aren't talented, but, like, let's get some color, please, please. Lynn has said casting the Founding Fathers with people of color, it's a way of pulling you into the story and then allowing you to leave whatever cultural baggage you have about the Founding Fathers at the door. There was another lady, a lady from an article in the Huffington Post. She discussed how people of color make the audience see that America is a nation of immigrants. And it's irrelevant that the Founding Fathers were white. And I think that's important because they were also immigrants. It's the truth. It's a truth that I think most people ignore, but it's true.
And I know that that's, like, a thing, too, and I know that's also sometimes a critique, not usually, but sometimes is. But I can't remember if it's in the Hamilton, like, the Revolution book or if there was an article, but I remember David Diggs had talked about his representing Thomas Jefferson and, you know, Thomas Jefferson, who was very, I mean, they were all slave owners, all of these people were, but, you know, Thomas Jefferson is one of probably the biggest slave owners of the show, I would say. I mean, they even mentioned one of his popular slaves and What Did I Miss? So, which I think goes back to the creativity of Lynn. But I'll see if I can find the article. If it was an article and it wasn't in the book, I'll tweet it out. But yeah, I remember just it was a really good one where he had talked about the difficulty of being a black man representing a former slave owner and how to make it his own and do the best he can with what it... I can't remember. I don't know how to explain it, but it was a good article. I'll see if I can find it.
Definitely. I think sort of going off that, Renee Ellis Goldsberry sort of talked about how she sees this as a way to look at a story that isn't necessarily considered a story for people of color, and then it's a way for them to reclaim it. And I think it's beautiful. I think I love that. I love that a lot.
So we're not going to go through, I know we sometimes have to, you know, talked about the cast of shows. We're not going to go through and list all the main people because you probably already know who they all are, but just some of the important people that took over on Broadway afterwards or in the tours. So Mandy Gonzalez took over being Angelica, who again was in the Heights. So that goes back to Lynn having this like group of friendship and keeping them, which is the same with Javier. Also, Munoz? I think Moon, took over Lynn's role of Usnavi in the Heights and then took over Lynn's role of Alexander Hamilton afterwards. So both of those. So one thing I thought was cool was Joshua Henry was actually in the play Mulligan and Madison in the Vassar Workshop. And then was on the first tour, the Angelica tour, and then ended up going to the Broadway show. How do you say his last name? Lowowi? I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name. Michael, who I think is one of my favorites. I feel really lucky that I got to see him when he was in Angelica, the Angelica tour. He went on to take over Hamilton, but he was also the first person to play Hamilton and Burr. So I don't know if they've had someone since then, but he was the first person. And there was even one day where he played, I think he played Burr for the morning show and then Hamilton for the night show,
which I
just love. Like, imagine being like, I play this one today. So I just thought that was really cool. So, you know, again, we're not going to go through all of them, but I think we talked about it when we talked about If Then, where usually the tours are great and talented, but it's rare that we see these people on tour that have this like flowing connection with Broadway, but here we're seeing it. And then the other one too, which I don't think I wrote down her name, but Emmy, I can't pronounce her last name either. She was in the ensemble of the original and then went on tour as Angelica and has gone on to do a bunch of other stuff. So I feel like, again, we just see this flow between like the tour and Broadway.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think, I mean, we see that a lot when shows go straight from Broadway to tour. A lot of the time, understudies or standbys or ensemble members will take over the lead roles on tour, which I think is awesome because it gives them the chance to actually do the show. So as we know, Hamilton is heavily influenced by a number of styles, including rap, hip-hop, R&B, pop, and musical theater. And it's basically a sung-through/rapped-through show. The music almost doesn't stop ever because Hamilton is nonstop. Before I get into my gushing about the show, I want to talk about our favorite songs. Let's get this business out of the way. So I did five. Obviously, there's more on my playlist. I felt five was a good number. I love Skylar Sisters. You can't deny that that's a bop. It is the hardcorest of the bops. that was a stupid sentence. Satisfied goes hard. I love Satisfied. I love Wait For It. Yorktown is one that I have recently fallen in love with. And then One Last Time, I cry. I bawl. I'm getting emotional just thinking about this. George Washington riffing at the end, just, woo, boy. Okay, those are my five.
So I did a top 46.
Out of 47 songs in the show.
Yeah. So if I had to pick, I didn't write them down, but my top three, I would pick Satisfied. I'd probably pick first. That was the first song that I like listened to on repeat. So that one, Wait For It. I mean, obviously we're overlapping there. And I personally, and I feel like this song never gets enough love, I love Hurricane. I think it's so beautifully done. The staging of it. This is the one that I most look forward to when I go to see the show because I love how they do the staging and the stage is rotating because they use that circular movement.
Rotating stage.
Thank you. I was like, if I keep doing the game movement, you'll say the word. They have the rotating stage and they make the lights like blue and purple to reflect a hurricane. And they're just slowly moving all of the, it's just, I love Hurricane and it never gets enough love. It's never anyone's top song. I have never met anyone else that loves Hurricane. If you do, please tell me so we can talk about it. But it's probably my like other favorite. I mean, there's obviously many, many other great songs in the shows and it really is hard to pick them. And I mean, I do also love Yorktown.
I knew that you liked Hurricane, and I knew that you liked Wait For It. I mean, I'm sure we've talked about Satisfied, but I don't know if we ever have.
Like I said, that was the first song that I listened to it, and I didn't even finish listening to the rest of the show. I went back and listened to it like two or three more times before I kept going. I was just like, damn, this shit good.
An important part of music, dating back to classical music, are themes and motifs. We see these in classical music all the time. Opera has them, movie scores have them, and musical theater does have them as well. Musical theater today doesn't use them as much. They sort of use different ways about it, and it's sort of a new way of thinking of motif analysis. But I think Hamilton is a good one to look at when we start talking about them, and I just want to gush a little bit about it. So a motif is a reoccurring idea in art. You see them in visual art. You see them in performance art. Motifs help reinforce the story through the music. you associate them with emotions, and you hear them at one point and you're like, oh, I had this thought the first time I heard this. And it's not necessarily a thing you actually think of. You hear it and you may make that connection, but you don't necessarily have that thought in your head, if that makes any kind of sense. So there was a video. There's a bunch of stuff on this about Hamilton. And this is what I was talking about when I meant in the Miss Saigon episode that there's no musical analysis done on it. This is the kind of analysis I want done on it. I actually started recently, yesterday I started doing Into the Woods. Oh, so good. So I just looked up a YouTube video. I found one that I thought would be a good example, and we'll tweet it out when we post this. But I think the YouTube video does a good job of explaining what a motif is and how it works in Hamilton, and a couple of the motifs we hear in Hamilton. I'm going to talk about a couple. This YouTube video talks mostly about the wait for it motif, but I want to talk about the first one, the first sound in the show, the bum ba da da dum bum bum ba da 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 dum. That motif basically means, hey, shut up and listen, because we're about to throw a bunch of story at you, a bunch of exposition at you. And I love that. The other one, I think sort of the best example of how a motif can really affect your thought process and really get you inside the character is during The World Was Wide Enough, when they're about to have the shootout and Hamilton is contemplating fire the gun. And there's this whole freeze frame moment where it almost turns into a spoken word moment. In that span, the video goes over this as well, if you want a visual representation of it. But in that span of just that section, he takes you through 10 different motifs. All that sort of had like happy connotations at the time. Like he does the rise up. He does the Eliza at one point. And there's a couple, I mean, obviously there's 10 different ones. But at this point, what Lin's doing is he's putting us in Hamilton's head and real and giving us that conflict by throwing all these different motifs at us. And you're like, oh wait, but the first time I heard this motif, it was happy and I liked it, but now I'm conflicted and what's going on? And that's sort of a way a motif can be used to take in a happier connotation and using it later on in the show to give us a different feeling. And I think it's a really cool way of working with music, and I love it.
Yeah, and this show definitely is one of those ones that does it more. As you guys can tell, Berkeley is much more of the technical musical theater fan, and I'm the I like this song musical theater fan. But this is one of those shows where, one, yes, there is a ton of research that people have done and a ton of different videos and stuff, which I love watching them too, because I usually don't do that kind of watching those sort of things in other shows, but there is ones where, you know, I've listened to the soundtrack 8 billion times and I still will start to hear stuff where I'm like, whoa, that was in that. I never noticed it. And this show just does it so many times.
One that I really like is, I mean, the video talks about the wait for it motif a lot, and I noticed it so much more as I was listening through the soundtrack. I can't remember which one it is. It's in Act 2, and I want to say, I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but as I was listening to it, I was like, that's the bass line from Wait For It. And I'm like, oh, that's over something Hamilton's singing. And it's good. The Wait For It motif is talked a lot about in the video in detail, and I highly recommend it. The other thing that makes the show so good is not only is he musically using motifs, he's also lyrically doing stuff like that as well. And there's a website. It's an interactive lyric visualization website. I don't know if you've seen this before. Have you seen
it? No.
Oh, okay. So I posted it in our like show outline. It's a really cool website. Basically, it talks about the lyrics and shows you different points. Like if the idea of death comes up, it shows you visually where death comes up in the songs and who says it and all that kind of stuff. It also breaks the show down into character relationships. So if you want to see anytime Angelica and Hamilton have a moment together, it'll show you that. It's a really cool website. I highly recommend looking into it. Yeah, right? She just pulled it up. And
this is amazing.
It's a really cool website just to go play around with. I highly recommend checking it out.
All right, you're going to have to finish the show because I'm going to be on this the rest of the time.
Yeah, it's such a cool website. I love it. Another thing about the lyrics that Lin does a really good job at is he references so many...
Everything.
Everything. He references a lot of musicals. references a lot of hip hop and rap. So, and I think that's part of the appeal, because if you understand hip hop and rap, you'll get a lot of those references. I don't necessarily have a giant hip hop and rap repertoire in my head, so I don't get a lot. But obviously, I get like a lot of the musical theaters. Like, you got to be carefully taught. Obviously, there's a couple other ones that I can't think of off the top of my head. But the other thing about the writing of the show, before we get on, I want to talk about sort of how I've compared it to Sweeney Todd. So my senior thesis in college was on the music of Sweeney Todd, because I'm so cool. But Hamilton came out as I was writing that. And listening to Hamilton, I sort of made a lot of connections, and I'd be interested to hear Lynn's sort of thoughts on this. But hear me out. Hamilton is basically the same story outline as Sweeney Todd. They both open with a prologue about the main character. The prologue then is reprised throughout the show.
I mean, both of them, you're not supposed to really root for the main character. Oh, yeah, I forgot about this. I was trying to look up what you were talking to see if there was any references that was made. I forgot that Hamilton did the opening number.
The Easter Bonnet, right?
Yeah, I know. I remember that they did the chorus line one, but I forgot about this one.
Yeah, the Easter Bonnet one is really cool. And I think that's what sort of gave me the idea, too, seeing that and being like, oh, wait, ideas. So basically, it's a really well-written show.
Again, you know, part of it is, like, I don't want to say and sound like I'm crazy, like, oh my god, Lynn is so good. But there are so many tiny little things where you're just like, what? And, I mean, you know, we talked about the references to both musical theater and the references to rap. And we talked about that, the show is hip-hop and rap. But even the way the lyrics just go together, you know, oh, Burr, you disgust me. Also, you've disgust me. Those are two different words. Like, I'm sounding like they're saying the same. Like, just like the little things like that, where I'm just like, I'm a dummy, because I would never come up with even something half as just like flowing. And I know Angelica has another one too, when she's talking about New York, like the gossip in the city is insidious. Yeah, and it's just like how? Yeah, no.
I've studied a lot on lyric writing, and there's like just basic rhymes like you would do in elementary school poetry. And then there's these that are so complex and it's so good.
Like, my boyfriend loves to make fun of the Aaron Burr, sir, part, just because like everything else is so complex. And my boyfriend likes to just like laugh about how everything is just like Aaron Burr, sir.
General Mercer.
Yeah.
I love it. So obviously the show has been extremely successful. I mean, before they even opened on Broadway, they had $30 million in ticket sales. That's crazy.
Yeah, and they wanted them to move to Broadway sooner than they were ready. They were like, come join us. Somebody, I didn't write down who the name was, but somebody was like, no, we're ready. We'll take you. We want this show. And Thomas wanted to keep working on it, so they wanted to keep it at off-Broadway for a little slightly longer.
Interesting. Naturally, the show has received a number of great reviews. And of course, you have some negative ones. We'll get to those in a second. One thing that I love that they did is that they brought back the lottery. The lottery, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe it was first started with Rent. Rent's sort of like the first show that was a Hamilton of its time, essentially. People who weren't theater people loved it. And a lot of the people who loved it were people who couldn't afford to go see a Broadway show. So they started the lottery. I believe with Rent, they did the first two rows. Hamilton, they just did the first row. But they would sell cheaper tickets, $20, $25 tickets. And you would sign up that day, and about 30 minutes before the show, they would announce who got it. And you would be able to see the show, front row. Those are seats people generally don't want. If you don't choose a front row seat, it's not a great spot. But if for a cheap ticket, if you want to see a show, yeah, a lottery's such a great idea. And since Hamilton has really brought it back, the shows do lotteries all the time now.
Yeah, which I love. I think that's great that more shows are doing that. We'll talk more next week about Ham for Ham, but the lottery got so popular and so many people were there that they started doing Ham for Ham so that people who didn't win the lottery had something, which is so cool, because that's not, you know, they don't have to do that. Like, but the fact that they went out there and, like, they ran them for a while, like, even after Lynn left, they kept running Ham for Hams for a while, which, like I said, more into detail about those next weeks, because there's so much to them. And then they eventually ended up making the app for the lottery, too, which wasn't just for the New York ones, even for the ones on tour, which was awesome. So I was constantly, you know, pre-everything happening, hitting them every time when we went to New York last year, even though we weren't seeing Hamilton. Like, I was like, well, we're here. Let's see if I can win the lottery. Like,
Like, it doesn't guarantee you a seat. But even for us, like you said, you were able to use that app, which was such a good idea because we don't live in San Francisco.
Yeah, we don't live close enough
to be able to drive to the theater, hope we get a ticket. I mean, we live close enough to do it, but we don't want to do that.
Still like an hour away. Like, yeah.
It doesn't guarantee you a spot, but the lottery is a good option as like a on the whim type of thing.
Yeah, I had a friend who actually won like twice within a week, which I was very salty about, but she was super excited because she's one of those people too. You know, she's a fellow teacher and has two kids, and I'm not being like she's poor, but like, the show's expensive. And so she won twice. And I told her to hurry up and win a third time so she could take me, because she took both her kids. She took one time and then won the other time. Yeah. So it was awesome. And it makes it more accessible.
Which is important. I know we've talked a little bit about the accessibility of professional musical theater. So I think the lottery is really important. And I think it's something that more shows should really do. And a lot of shows now have just opened up like standing room and stuff like that, which is smart. Many of the negative reviews revolve around some historical inaccuracies in Hamilton, and a lot of people had issues with the fact that the show doesn't address Hamilton's participation in Native American genocide and slave owning.
Okay, so first, the historical accuracy thing is stupid. If your critique of Hamilton is it's not historically accurate, you're stupid. Stop. First of all, please let me know if you can name a single play, musical, movie, anything that's not a documentary. And even documentaries, are they really 100%? No, they have a bias. So, and I've been seeing this as Six has started to kind of pop up. Six is getting the same treatment too, where it's like, it's not accurate. No, it's not 100% accurate, but they did the best they could. Yeah, you're gonna have to move some stuff around to make a more concise story, you know, like Philip dying. He actually dies after the election of 1800, but it makes for a better story to have him die earlier, and then Hamilton leaves, like all this stuff, like stop. And then as far as the other parts, yeah, I know that's difficult, and they do kind of glance over the slave owning and all that, but I mean, if you look at the song Nonstop, that song alone covers the span of like 10 years or something. I don't know what the exact timeline is. Like, they're like, oh, by the way, Hamilton did this and this and this and this and this and this. Just, we don't have time to go into these details, but we just want you to know. But I feel like they don't completely ignore the slave owning. Like, they definitely mention it. I mean, maybe they don't mention Hamilton's as much, and I guess maybe that's where the critique comes from, because I mean, they definitely mention Thomas Jefferson's slave owning, and like I said, they mention Sally and What Did I Miss, and then I think it's the first cabinet battle. You know, they're like, we know who's really doing the planting. So they definitely mention the slave owning, but I understand that critique a little bit more, but I still am kind of like,
as an audience, I think a lot of people miss the fact that we are trying to tell a huge story. That's the issue with these historical musicals that people start pointing out inaccuracies for. Dramatic action is a thing, and the show needs to have dramatic action. Like you said, I think the most important one is Philip dying when it happened. It makes more sense in the show for that to happen. I think the other thing that I love that isn't, Angelica really didn't have a thing for Hamilton.
And she was didn't married already.
Yep. She eloped 3 years before she met Hamilton. The pressure for her wasn't to get married and like marry rich or whatever. That's all made up. They had 15 other siblings. Like, it wasn't just the three sisters. But what kind of story would that be? Like, okay, so Eliza and Hamilton just got married, but I've already eloped, and I don't really have feelings for Hamilton. That just cuts out one of the best songs in the show.
The Chernow biography that Lynn read first to base it is like a 700-page book. Like, if you've never looked at it, it's not a thin book. But the thing, too, is, like, you're not supposed to go into, and like we mentioned when we just talked about Sweeney Todd, you're not supposed to leave and be like, that Hamilton, man, he is a good guy. No.
He's not.
And we're seeing this right now. Like, we are seeing this with our current climate and what's going on, and people are, you know, pulling down all these old historical statues, and people are getting so mad. Like, I just literally, I mean, this is kind of dating when this is happening, but literally even last night, people were pulling down Ulysses S. Grant statues. And there was people that were like, well, he only owned one slave. And it's like, What is the cutoff for what's okay and not okay? I think one slave is too many slaves. And so, you know, we're seeing these people did good things. They, you know, George Washington was our first president. Alexander Hamilton fucking did a bunch of stuff, which was really good. Thomas Jefferson did stuff that was really good. That doesn't mean that they're good people. I think anyone who goes into this show or knows anything about the show, no one's leaving it and thinking like, oh yeah, these people were great. Sure love me some Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson. They're so cool. No.
So I think it's time to get into your favorite piece of reaction. The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I hate it so much.
So it's written by Ishmael Reed. And it's essentially Lin-Manuel Miranda being put into A Christmas Story with historical figures. It's essentially calling Lin out for excluding slavery and Hamilton's experience with that. Again, I get his point. I get it. Many people have criticized it because Reed has never actually seen Hamilton. However, he has said he has read through the script thoroughly, but he's never seen it.
I mean, it just goes back to the same thing I said. Like, buddy, how about instead of writing this thing, trying to call out Lin for his show and your opinion and on him, why don't you make your own show that highlights these uses? And I wish I knew more now that I'm thinking about it.
I mean, to be fair, he did kind of create his own show highlighting them.
But I mean, he's just like highlight, but it was more just like, this is the things you did wrong, Lin. The only other response to the show, obviously not, like 98% of it is positive, which is great. But there was a couple of critiques, but I just thought that this one was kind of funny too, of like the New York Post, which Hamilton founded, had a critique of the Hamilton and Burr relationship and said it like failed to drive the show.
So as we've stated before, Hamilton is a phenomenon. They were nominated for 16 Tonys, which is the most Tonys anybody has ever been nominated. But they only won 11, which is not the most any show has ever won. The producers holds the most with 12.
They were so 12. Close to tying.
They were so close.
That was so bad.
So I looked it up, and I think some of their downfall was the fact that they had people nominated for multiple categories, or multiple people nominated in the same category.
Yeah.
So they had two best actors, Lin and... Leslie. I forgot his name. And then I think the three supporting males were all nominated in the same category as well.
It was David Diggs, so Jefferson/Lafayette, Jonathan Groff for King George, and then Christopher Jackson for Washington were all nominated for feature.
So the three, obviously only one person could win that category, and I believe Christopher Jackson won that, right?
No, David Diggs won.
Oh, David, that's right. Yeah. And then, obviously, only one person could win Best Lead, and Leslie won that. So the other ones they lost, Philippa Sue lost to Cynthia Erivo, which, hey, I totally get it. And then the scenic design lost to She Loves Me, the revival of She Loves Me. You have to go back to the show. In regards to scenic design, Hamilton's fairly minimalistic, and She Loves Me is more of a classic show, and they do require a lot more set-wise. So it makes sense. The other important thing to mention about Hamilton is it won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, which musicals don't normally do. That's super important. They won Grammy Award, they won a Billboard Music Award, and the creative team, this is why I think it was so important to mention the creative team, they were given a Kennedy Center honor in 2018.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of the things that gets it does get talked about just because Lin isn't an EGOT winner. He still needs his Academy Award. But he's like, but I have a Pulitzer Prize, so it's all good.
An Academy Award. What is that? TV?
Movies.
Did he not win for Moana?
No.
That's bullshit.
I know.
What?
I think if I remember right, he had won for Moana, he would have now been the youngest person to get an EGOT. Because I think it's the Avenue Q guy. I can't think of his name.
Oh, Robert.
Yeah, I think he right now is the current youngest person.
Okay, well, Disney, hire Lin back again, please.
I know. Didn't get it from Mary Poppins, didn't get it from Moana.
No. Whoa. Hamilton needs to, all right, Hamilton. In the Heights needs to come out, because he could win for that.
Right? Thanks, hey. Corona.
We have just a small list of a couple of other things that Hamilton has sort of affected that I think are really cool. Like the $10 bill in 2015, the Treasury Department was going to change Hamilton's face on the $10 bill to, at the time, an unnamed woman. But mostly due to the fact that the show was such a cultural phenomenon, they actually changed Andrew Jackson's face on the $20 bill to Harriet Tubman, which I've never seen. I'm pretty sure I have a $20 bill in my wallet right now.
So,
no. Did it not happen?
Political. It was supposed to start happening this year in 2020, but due to some choices, it is not happening yet. So it hasn't. It's supposed to still happen, but there's just it's been postponed. Which is right. Can we get Andrew Jackson off our money though? Not that I'm saying Hamilton's a great person, but if we had to pick like the trashiest person on our money, I mean, come on, let's look at the name of his musical. So.
Another big moment for Hamilton was when Mike Pence, the current vice president, went to see the show. They had a speech for him after the show, and Mike Pence was not offended by it in any way. Trump was. I don't want to really say much about this.
The only thing I was going to say is not... I think the fact that Mike Pence didn't say anything and just sat there and took it is the most respect I will probably ever have for that man.
Agreed. Yeah.
I was just like... And it wasn't, like, I looked over it again when we were looking at him, like, they're not, like, berating him. They're just like, hey, as people of color, we're a little bit concerned about what's going to happen. We're just wanting you to know. We're a little bit worried what's going to happen. And he was just like, okay.
Yeah, which I think is so respectful. No, good. Good for him.
Parodies.
Yeah. So there's Jeb, the musical, which is about Jeb Bush. I think that one's important to talk about. That's all I really have to say about it. Spamilton, which is, well, I need to look into because I love Forbidden Broadway.
I didn't realize it was when I was looking. I was like, oh, I didn't know because I remember you had mentioned Forbidden Broadway. I'm so mad because this was supposed to be coming to San Francisco this summer, and I was so excited and I was going to buy tickets.
Have you? Because
I was like, I haven't. No, I haven't listened to any Forbidden Broadway or anything, but I will gladly do any sort of Hamilton related thing. So I was like, yeah, why not? Like, it's in so many things. Like, I'm pretty sure it was in, like, a Brooklyn Nine-Nine episode, which Lynn ended up being in a Brooklyn Nine-Nine episode. It was in, like, Fuller House, which I totally forgot about. We were just watching, like, the newest season. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. Like, they went to go see it, and then, you know, something happened. And then the very beginning of, like, the newest season, she was just like, don't tell me what happens. And it's like, because, you know, everyone knows. But, yeah, it's everywhere. It, you know, goes back to just, like, it's mainstream. Like, if you ask random non-musical theater person, name a musical, like,
Hamilton.
It's probably going to be it.
Or, like, Wicked.
Yeah, Wicked, probably. Phantom, Cats, Hamilton.
Oh, okay. And now we can move on because we've mentioned AWL.
Yeah. I'm just sure we're not mentioning one of his musicals.
So the reason we decided to do Hamilton this week and next week is because this weekend, the original cast recording is being released on Disney+. I am so stoked.
I'm not gonna lie. My biggest fear is that I'm gonna go on and something's gonna happen and it's not gonna be like the site's gonna crash or something and I'm not gonna be able to watch it. And I'm like, I will cry.
I will not be surprised if that happened. But at the same time, I'm like, Disney, come on. You own half the internet. So I think it's time to move into our ratings. Do you want to go first or should
I go first? Because I didn't write one down.
Oh,
I
didn't think of one. I have the best one.
I know. I see it. And I'm like, oh, crap.
It's so obvious. So I'm going to rate it off the 10 dual commandments. Duh. I wish I knew the 10 dual commandments off the top of my head because I'd be like, I rate it. Place is fire. But I don't.
I think that's 9 or 10. I think that's 10.
I think it's, yeah, 10 is that. So I have a lot of issues with the fact that they don't mention the slave trade at all. So I'm going to give it a 5. I'm very hesitant to give the show a 10, only because I always think that there's room for improvement, but I genuinely don't know what I would say to this show to make it any better. And I'm not somebody, like, I'm not like Sarah, I'm not, like, obsessed with the show at all. I do not have a Hamilton tattoo. We'll do my show that I have my tattoo from eventually. We won't mention it now, though. But... I think I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10 dual commandments. I want to give it a 9. I want to, but I don't have any reasoning to give it less than a 10, frankly. I really like the show, and I think it does wonders for musical theater. So, yeah, I'm going to give it a 10.
I will give it, I mean, as Berkeley just said, I'm obsessed. You, have heard it. You will hear it next week when we go more into all the other things. I actually made a TikTok recently on my personal one of, like, you know, the one where you just expose all the things you love. And so I made my Hamilton one, and I was like, I have so much stuff. And the other thing too about it, which I didn't mention, is I love history. Like, originally I wanted to be a high school history teacher. So I think that's the other reason I love this show too, is it just brings in all the things I love of, like, musical theater. I like hip hop, brings in history, and, like, just merges it into everything I love. All we would need, and even mentions a cat. So perfect. Everything I love in one show. So I will give it, and like Berkeley said, there is flaws, but I feel like even those are so small. It really is, you know, I feel like we've already said all these things, but it made musicals mainstream. It gave people of color a bigger voice. I mean, as we just talked about all the things and people that got nominated for Tonys, except for Jonathan Groff, they're all people of color. It just brought all these things to a light. So again, I too will also be giving this one 10 out of 10 Skylar siblings.
Hey, yes, I like that. That's good. That's a good one. So if you want to interact with us, where can they interact with us?
Perfect. They can interact with us. I'm just kidding.
It's been a recording session. You will not hear most of my mistakes.
No, don't even edit this one.
I've struggled a lot today, y'all.
So you can find us on Twitter or TikTok, if you have a TikTok, at MTBC Podcast from Musical Theater Book Club Podcast, or you can email us at mtbcpodcast@gmail.com.
By the time this episode comes out, I will also probably have started our Instagram account, and I'm hoping to also make it MTBC Podcast. I'm sure there is nobody else named MTBC Podcast on Instagram, so that is what we will say the handle is.
You just have to make sure you do it before this episode, because someone's going to make it then.
I know! No, I'm going to do it before.
And then the only other thing, you know, of course, please rate, review, subscribe. That's how we get more listeners. Not to be like, we're really cool, but we think we're pretty cool, and we would like other people to listen to us, so please share. And the other thing, too, because we can see where some of our listeners are, if you are someone who is outside of the U.S. and you leave us a review, please email it to us. iTunes, I don't know about Spotify, but I know for Apple Podcast, if you are not, like, we are in the U.S., if you're outside of the U.S., it will not show reviews from outside. So if you are in a different country and you are listening to us, please email us your reviews, because we will not be able to see them and we'll want to see what you're saying.
Yeah. And if there's a show you want us to talk about, or a theater topic you want us to talk about, maybe someone you want us to interview, we have some things up our sleeve. That's right. If there's something you want us to talk about, let us know. We'll even do a mini. Like, if it's something small, like, I don't know, there was this whole thing with Andrew Lloyd Webber recently and the UK government wanting to return musicals without singing. If you want us to talk about it, we'll talk about it. I'm not going to say any more about it, because I want you to make me talk about it.
The only other thing, and you probably have noticed this at this point, but we just figured we'd throw it in this episode really quick, is we are actually going to not be giving clues to our next episodes anymore. We realized we really enjoyed doing it and it was really fun. But part of the problem is, especially as we're trying to start lining up interviews, we want to make sure that we're doing shows related to the people we're interviewing, and we don't want to interview them and be like, okay, your show is going to be on in like 4 weeks now. So it was just too much to make sure that our schedules stay consistent. Plus, we're asking you for, you know, things to recommend. And if you recommend a show to us, we want to be able to get to it. We don't want to give a, like, this is our hit, and then it be something different. So you probably have already noticed that with our Miss Saigon and our If Then episodes have been switched from what they originally were. So we're not going to say this every episode. We're just throwing it in. If you're like, wait, what happened to that? That we will no longer be giving hints, unless they're really, really good. But that's rare. We're not that clever. We're not Lynn. Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Have a great week, and don't get caught in a shootout. Thank you.